Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups, and all things that come from that. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Fisher, here with our fearless leader, Mike Perna.
It's always fun when you guys call me that. Like, it makes me feel, like, important and stuff.
But you are. You're so important.
Well, I'm something.
You know, I could do like that deal on the Dice Tower and be like, you know, where he's the apple to my eye or whatever, you know.
And then yeah, what often happens though is because of the fact that they're quickly approaching 500 episodes, they've become a little bit more obscure now. Though I will say the most recent one was the Shaggy to my Scooby, and that was kind of awesome.
Yeah. You're the Donnie to my Marie.
Oh, no. No, no Osmonds. We're making this an Osmond-free podcast.
Oh, come on. The Osmonds were the best.
Okay. For those of you who might be listening to the very first time on episode 144 here, you may be curious as to what the heck we're actually doing. We are minus one host this week. Mr. Romo had another opportunity to play tour guide, shall we say, to somebody who is from out of town. Apparently January is the month when everybody decides, hey, it's cold where I live, let's go to California instead.
Well, actually, I think he's not playing tour guide today. He's playing DM.
Oh, he's playing... Oh, needless to say, you know, Romo getting a chance to run a game. Shocker. Well,
I mean, if you think about it, though, his buddy's in for a few days, and it's the last chance to get to see him for a while, and they run a one-shot. I mean, that's what they do.
I can't say anything, because the last time I traveled to see a friend of mine, it was to teach him how to play D&D, so
see?
I can hardly fault him for this.
Well, did you know, 1 year ago, we were minus one host as well, because it was my first time recording with Mr. Romo.
That's right. I was the minus one host, yes. But
it's my
true.
1 year birthday.
That's ridiculous. You ever have one of those moments when you don't realize, you know, how both long and short a year is at the same time?
It's 26 episodes.
Yeah, I'm aware of the math. But yeah, no. Have you been playing anything interesting lately? I have a couple little things I can talk about, but, you know, normally we do the bantery and I don't have a huge pile of things to play with this time.
Well, as you know, every Friday night we game at the Fisher household. And my son, who is six, going to be seven in like 2 weeks, begged and begged and begged and begged and wouldn't shut up about it for us to play Munchkin. And the only issue that I really had with him playing Munchkin was some of the language on the cards. But finally, he wore me down, and we played Munchkin. And we went back through the rules and double-checked them from the last time we played just to make sure we were playing correctly. And actually, we were not playing correctly in a previous game. And so we went back and played, and my wife actually said, wow, this game is actually a lot more enjoyable than I remember, and we can play it again.
Well, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, I think part of the, and I picked up on a house rule from a friend, and I think that's what really got me was in his house rule when you know, I don't know how often you play Munchkin, but when you can pull a door and put it in your hand and you pull a monster, he was sending monsters after people. And I picked up on that house rule and I started playing with that. And you can only send monsters after people if you have the Wandering Monster card. So that's why I was like, oh, this is a lot better because I'm not getting attacked every which way.
Oh, yeah. No, you need the Wandering Monster card. That, yeah. I would see how that would be obnoxious if you're just constantly throwing other monsters at other people.
Yeah. But that, yeah, so we played it. We actually played two rounds. I printed out a little, because it's hard. I figured it'd be hard for him with the D10 to keep his level. So I printed out, like, the game board from the Munchkins Deluxe. And we used change to move to the little rooms and stuff like that. So we had fun. It was a great game night. This Friday, my daughter's wanting us to play Carcassarone.
It's always fun to hear you say that.
Carcassarone. Wait, Carcassonne. Yeah, Carcassonne. Yeah, that's the correct way to pronounce it. So she's wanting to play that. She played it at a game night day I had at church for the kids, and she really enjoyed it. So we'll be playing that. But I have been preparing her first, well, it was going to be mixer, boys and girls role-playing session.
Well, you've been kind of gearing up for that for a while.
Yes. I wanted to make it the most spectacular thing these kids have ever done. I even cleaned my basement for this.
Wow.
Yes.
That's saying something.
Yeah. I will send pictures later to see where my basement is at. I do not have before pictures, but it was horrible. Because, you know, when we moved in, there was a lot of trash in our basement, and I sort of cleaned it up. But what happened was where our last church didn't have a physical location, we kind of ended up as a storage facility for the clothing, for clothing drives. And when we take people in and they stay with us, they put their stuff in our basement. And sometimes they just leave stuff and they don't want it again. So I've been going through all that stuff, calling people, see if they need their things. And if not, hauling it off to the dump. And one side of our basement where we're going to be playing is clean. And I've got the tables ready. I've got my DM screen ready. I've got cutouts of the little monsters ready. And I got my Sirenscape ready. And I'm just, you know, going to make it awesome. I think my daughter did request Mountain Dew and Doritos and pizza and all the normal things you eat when you role play.
I mean, for your first, you know, gaming experience, you might as well just go whole hog and just really embrace it.
Yeah, but I know on the first time my wife will not care that I do that, but on the second time she'll be like, well, it needs to be carrots and celery. But
you got to give the one.
I know. You got to have the original experience. And heck, if I could find it, I'd give Jolt Cola.
No one should ever consume Jolt Cola.
They still make it, by the way.
Do they really? I thought that had gone by the wayside. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's hard to find, though. It's very hard to find. I figured it would be up there. I thought it came in with the same group of people that did like stuff like Moxie. Because I know that's a northern drink.
To go to Moxie, you need to go farther up north than we are here.
So I love that stuff, though.
I'm not going to lie. I do, too. I can't explain why I like it, but I just really do.
Well, when April Lynn was moving from Boston down to work with Game Church, she stayed a night at our house because she stayed at other people's houses along the way, so she wouldn't have to pay for hotels and stuff. And she brought me a bottle of it, and it was one of the best things I ever tasted.
Yeah, no, for a while there when I was doing youth ministry, every year we'd travel to one of the elders of the church had a house up in Maine.
Yeah.
And so every year we'd take the kids up there, and every time there were like four of us who would get a case each and bring it home and like ration it out.
Oh man, that sounds delicious. Sounds like something I would do too. But you know, something funny's been happening with everything with this campaign. My daughter before, this is her first time playing Savage Worlds. And to me, you know, Savage Worlds, and I've talked about it, it's just a better rule set. And she's played 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons, and that's all she's ever played. She loves her dice. She loves D20s. And so, like, we literally had one of those arguments, the arguments we always see in the sitcoms of, you can't have that long hair in my house. And it's more like, you can't play 4th edition in my house. Under my house, we're going to play Savage Worlds.
No child of mine will play 4th edition.
Yeah, so and she's been like, Dad, please, let's just play D&D. Let's not play Savage Worlds. Let's just play D&D. But really, I was thinking about it today, and what is D&D? If we think about it and break it down, is D&D itself the rules or the world?
Well, you can't even say that really, because think of it in the history of everything that is Dungeons and Dragons. You've got Forgotten Realms, which is most of it.
Yes.
You know, most of what we know of when we think about D&D is Forgotten Realms.
Yeah. Greyhawk.
Greyhawk, Ravenloft, Eberron, Dark Sun.
Everywhere. But you see what I'm saying, though, is the idea of a general fantasy setting, is that D&D? I mean, or is it, or we always, but when we say D&D, because in my house, Dungeons and Dragons or playing D&D has become like the words of, some people say, I want to go get a Coke. You know, down here, we use the word Coke, up north, soda or pop. And, but when I say I'm going to go get a Coke, that can be any beverage. And when I say I'm going to go play Dungeons and Dragons, that, or D&D, not Dungeons and Dragons per se, but I'm going to play D&D, means I'm going to go role play.
Right.
So, I mean,
well, it kind of has the idea of, you know, we use certain, I forget what, there's a term for it when something becomes so entrenched, like a brand becomes so entrenched that it like just becomes a word in and of itself to mean that thing. Like, how many of us ever say, hand me that facial tissue? It's yeah. Hand me that Kleenex. Even though Kleenex was a brand of facial tissue. I think for a long time, you know, especially because for quite a while, D&D was, at least in any formal setting, the game. I mean, how many people even remember Chainmail, which is the game that it came from?
Yeah. I think it's called Brand General Side.
I don't know.
It's what the internet's telling me.
We see it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, a particular brand of a thing, like Kleenex or Band-Aid.
Yeah. Or McNuggets.
You know, you're not wrong.
I mean, it's nowhere where we go, I want some chicken McNuggets. I'm like, well, they don't have them here. They have nuggets.
Right.
Yeah, so.
But, I think it's interesting just because of the way that we view the concept. Because, especially because of the fact that, and we've brought this up so many times already, D&D carries with it this ominous weight in the minds of people who don't know anything about it.
Yes.
Yes. And so it's interesting when we, you know, I don't know if you've had this experience, but when I've talked to people about role playing, they go, well, I don't think you should be playing this. I go, well, there's other stuff.
Well, I mean, it's like when I tell her friends we're playing games, you know, it's like, well, just tell them we're playing games. Don't tell them we're playing Dungeons and Dragons, because I really don't know what their parents are going to think about that. And because, you know, there's still a lot of negative condemnation from the term D&D. That's why I always like to use the word Savage Worlds. When it's why do you call it Savage Worlds? Why can't we just call it D&D, Dad? I'm like, she doesn't understand about the negative condemnation of Dungeons and Dragons.
It is interesting because of the fact that, like, I can say in my home church, now my home church is very supportive of inroads, but part of that is that there's a group of people who know exactly what we do and are supportive. Then there's another group of people on the church staff that understand that this is an interesting way to do ministry to a group of people that they don't know how to minister to. It's that latter group that is interesting to me, because I pretty much go out of my way to not mention role-playing games because of the fact that I was told early on that one of my pastors is diehard. You need to not play these sort
That's
of things.
Not good.
So I had that whole thing where I have to watch myself even mentioning it because of that in front of this one pastor. But then another pastor who is a really good friend of mine, it's funny because it, you know, you could even see this as a forerunner of what Inroads was going to become. I was running a D&D game for a bunch of our youth group kids. And, you know, I ended up having to fight against the satanic panic for a while there, because several parents came back to me that were like, I don't think you should do this. I'm worried for my child. But this pastor was actually one of the parents. And so I didn't think about that when I asked his daughter to come play with us. And so she's like, yeah, my dad's outside. He's going to come in and pick us up. And I'm like, okay, deep breath. I don't know how this is going to go over. And he's a really tall guy. So he leans over the table. And when he leans over the table, he's leaning over the table. This, yeah. This, you know, just ugh kind of thing. And I'm like, okay. And I didn't even look up. I go, hey, Jeff. And he looks down and I'm like, all right, here it comes. And he goes, wow, gaming's come a long way since I was a kid. And I'm like, yes, I'm good.
That's great. Well, I tell your story, though, about that all the time. You know, I use it as an example of how gaming can hold people together and hold groups of people together and create new groups as well. I love that story that you had about the role-playing group you had at your old church.
That, you know, it's still funny because we'll still occasionally talk about some of this stuff. And one of those kids is still actively playing. In fact, you'll see her all the time on our YouTube channel. Alyssa Kolb was one of my first gaming as ministry experiments. You know, a lot of the other kids, like another one is playing in my personal game. He's not doing anything with the Inroads Gaming, but he's still playing there. A couple of them just don't, but it was an interesting dynamic to see that kind of develop.
Yeah, Alyssa's awesome. I played with her some too. She's great.
Oh yeah, she's good people. But it does give that interesting kind of notion of what does this, how do we address this when we talk about this to people? Because, you know, we can even, you know, I'll even spin it out a little early to, you know, kind of go on the flip side of it. Normally we kind of wait till the half hour mark to really bring in the whole church aspect, yeah. But this is too perfect an illustration for me not to say it. Like, when people ask or people say, like, I'm a Christian, dude, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you say that to somebody within the church, they go, oh, okay, what denomination? Yeah. What kind of church do you go to? Is it a high church, low church? Is it Presbytery? Is it this, that? Like, within, everybody knows. But if you're talking to somebody who's never been in a church before and you say, I'm a Christian,
yep.
They have whatever flavor of church they've been exposed to.
Good
that
or bad.
Is the only way to do church.
Yes. Right. And you know, with me, though, usually I've gotten to a point now in my life to where when they say I'm a Christian, to me, that all that is somebody said that I accept Jesus Christ as my Savior. And that's how I boil everything down to yes or no. Have you or have you not?
Well, I'll tell you. Well, and that also, you know, I mean, we can go down rabbit trails of all sorts of things. Yeah. But I know lots of people who would say, you know, if you ask them, are you a Christian? They would say absolutely.
Yeah.
And then if I asked them, what does that mean? They'd be really hard pressed to say what that meant. And so it's interesting, you know, kind of this episode is probably going to bust out just being a discussion on the way we use language. Because if you think about it, yeah, you know, I could explain the ins and outs of role. Like, heck, in a couple days, we're going to do the first session of our Numenera game. Now, I could explain Numenera to somebody, or I could say, oh, we're playing Numenera. And people have no concept of what that means and what that looks like. But if I just, you know, if I don't have the time or I really don't think they're all that interested, because there's that level of small talk when it comes to this stuff that I've learned to identify early. And I go, you're not really interested enough for me to explain all of what this means.
Oh, yeah.
So in those instances, I just say, yeah, it's basically D&D. Even though those systems are so far apart, they're not even in the same neighborhood. But it's just, I tap into the common understanding, as it were. But it's interesting because that, in and of itself, really doesn't do justice to any individual game, not even D&D.
Well, I know. I mean, because we're so generalizing everything when we do that. I mean, because everything has its little beautiful nuances. And the same way with, and I'll put it a little biblically, how certain denominations have their nuances as well. Everything has its good and its bad, and same way with role-playing games.
Yeah. Now, I, like, I will break down. Well, let's break down some of the. We mentioned them briefly, but let's talk about some of the key distinctions. And I don't have a lot of experiences with some of the different worlds of D&D. Mm-hmm. But Forgotten Realms is, you know, like I said,
that's generic.
If you've ever played D&D and no one told you what type of D&D you were playing, were probably playing in Forgotten Realms. It's the generic, this is what the fantasy world looks like. It's so very Tolkien-y. It's very much expected fantasy setting. You know, there are certain key things that, you know, you know that you'll eventually run into if you've ever played in that world. You will eventually wind up in Waterdeep because, of course, you will. You know, there's all sorts of things that you'll see, but it's generic.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. It just is.
Yes.
I've never really spent much time in Greyhawk, so I can't break down the nuance of difference there.
Greyhawk, I would say it's not as high fantasy as Forgotten Realms.
Okay.
It's more medieval. There is some magic, there is a few monsters per se, but it's not fantasy heavy.
Okay, so even in that's a huge distinction because In Forgotten Realms, you're dealing with, you know, you can go down the street and see, you know, a wizard or whatever.
Yeah.
And if Greyhawk is a not high fantasy, it's not all the wizards and magic and weirdness. And that's a huge, huge distinction.
Yeah. And I think part of it, the reason why it's the way it is because it was one of the first to develop. When Chainmail was coming along and then we had Dungeons and Dragons, it was being developed alongside of Blackmoor. And they just had barely added the rules in Chainmail about magic and hand-to-hand combat.
Right.
And so that they were still fleshing everything out.
And then these are just the two, you know, quote-unquote biggest ones. I can't go through this without talking about the two that change everything. Eberron.
Yes.
Eberron is like the entire magic system is different. You're dealing with a lot more technology. You've introduced the Warforged.
Yes. And I think that came along at 3.5 as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's what kind of grew in the Pathfinder.
Right.
So, sorry.
the Warforged, I love the Warforged. They are magical robots. I can't tell you how many times, whether it's Eberron or not, I've played Warforged. Basically, anytime somebody let me play a Warforged, I'm going to play a Warforged. But that's an entirely different concept of the world.
Yes.
Because everything's more technologically. I mean, the coolest thing is, like, you can literally take a train that runs on magic. And I'm not just talking about powered by magic. I'm talking literally the tracks that it runs on are magic. Like, this is a completely different understanding. You can't even begin to put Forgotten Realms and Eberron in the same world without some really jarring differences. And then you start getting into Dark Sun.
Yes.
Dark Sun is like a post-apocalyptic. The world is covered in sand. There's absolute wasteland between cities. Elves are completely, you know, we think of a very, you know, Tolkien-esque, like they're brilliant and they're aloof and they're beautiful and all that. They're timeless. In Dark Sun, elves are savages. They're like almost mindless killing machines that wander the waste.
You have my favorite setting.
Is Dark Sun?
No, Ravenloft.
Oh, Ravenloft. Yeah. I'll let you talk a little bit about Ravenloft too.
Ravenloft is your I guess the Baroque style horror I mean, it's based around the concept of Dracula and Frankenstein and all the undead goodies that came out with that. And just imagine a universe based around that romantic period of when Dracula was around. But, you know, he's not called Dracula there. He's called Strahd. Yes. And the beautiful thing about it is that it's one of those planes that connects every other plane in.
You can always wander through the mists and end up in Ravenloft.
Yeah, no matter from where you're at, you could be in Greyhawk and end up in Ravenloft. You could be in Waterdeep or Forgotten Realms and end up in Ravenloft. I mean, it's just one of those things that there's its denizens are made up from every plane, and we call them settings, but in D&D they're called planes, and so their community is based around different planes. There's different parts of Ravenloft that, or the Dread Isles that are where they extracted some people from one area and they set up a community, and you know, and that just every community is a little different because it's based upon that place they came from.
Yeah. And, you know, the more we talk about this, and these are just the major ones, this doesn't even allow for the fact that every GM that ever touched these books, every player that's ever, you know, created some kind of character in these worlds, they're all making up different renditions of these major settings. And like I just said, we're gearing up to run Numenera. And the thing I love about the world building that they do in these books is actually the kind of thing that really annoys some people. Because Monte Cook Games basically just said, here's a couple things. You can do what you want with it, but here's a couple things. These are some points of interest. And just let's the GMs and the players create so much of the in-between. And I promise you that the ninth world that lives in my head is not the ninth world that lives elsewhere in the world.
Yes.
Because it can't be. Because there's so much wide open space that they just hint at and suggest and give the people room to build something. So if that's the case, you can't just say, oh, it's like this. Like, even just saying Numenera is not sufficient. Like, I struggled even when I just recently put out our intro video for the new Inroads Plays series.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to summarize what you can see, but I'm like, I'm making my own stuff. I'm probably going to be taking stuff from the community stuff because ever since the game was released, whole websites have been created just for Numenera that they've created. So just for ciphers and artifacts, let alone all the stuff out in the world. Literally just the toys that you're playing with have their own websites. And so it's impossible to nail down any of this stuff, let alone the fact that you're in a world that, depending on what part of the world you're in, it can be a completely different feel. So it's hard to, you're kind of forced to not dwell in the label, but at the same point, we kind of have to for the sake of communication.
Oh yeah. Just to make it plainer. I mean, you know, we don't go around it, being Christians, we don't go around speaking Christianese, as I like to call it, around people that don't understand it. So, again, being gamers, we can't go around speaking dork, as my wife calls it, around non-dorks.
That's valid. No, it's valid.
Yeah, because for the longest time when we were dating, one of the things that she would do is just come over to my apartment and watch TV while I painted miniatures, and because my desk was right next to the couch, and I would start talking about the aspects of a game, and she'd be like, hold up, dork.
You know, a lot of times we got to take stock in this. Now, because of the fact that I travel between worlds so often, I've basically learned how to wade through this sea. It's really interesting to me too, because in the context of D&D, I have been as hardcore or as light and fluffy as the people I'm playing with. So there have been times when we're joking and laughing and people are making South Park references in character. And I'm like, okay, it's this kind of game. So I too will become that kind of player. But then there have been in other games where they're like, we are always in character. Unless you delineate that you are somehow not speaking in character, you will always be considered speaking in character, and you should have an accent if you're from this location. And I'm like, I'm in. Yeah. I'm doing it. I'm all in, Forrest. I'm all in. But when you try to use that language outside of that game, like if the comedy players played in the we are always in character people or vice versa, it doesn't work. And you start realizing that communication is not just I'm saying a thing. Communication is when I say a thing, you hear the thing, you understand the thing, and then, you know, that, you know, we move on to the next point.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to think of it, and honestly, it's a lot of how the tavern operates, if you think about it. Because one thing that has always kind of taken people back when I talk about our community is that I say we literally have every major denomination. There's at least one active member of our community from pretty much every major denomination.
Yes.
And that's hardly scientific. I haven't like gone through and polled anybody or anything like that. I haven't done a census data, but I, you know, just having talked with people, I know that. And so it's interesting to see all the different flavors and all the different things that come about when we talk about the expression of faith. Like, these people are, as much as the fact that we are all together in Christ and all part of the body, we all come from vastly different perspectives on this.
Yes. And we all eat at the same table.
It's a big thing.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting, and this is something that is really cool when this happens, and it should always be the case within the body of Christ. Huge emphasis on should. When we do that, when we are able to see each other and acknowledge the difference, I think it's important to not just look over the difference. It's you know, in our pursuit of unity, we don't deny that these are vastly different experiences. Because I think that robs us too.
Yeah.
I think that we both have to pursue unity. Like, we are all together in Christ. Like you were saying, you know, it all comes down to what do you believe about Jesus?
Yes.
What do you believe about God? And the rest of the stuff is negotiable.
We call it open hand discussions versus closed fist discussions at our church.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. Like, I spent a lot of years looking at, and I came from a tradition that is hard-nosed. It's you have to believe this or you're doing it wrong. They will tell you that that's not how they see things, but it really is. And in a handful of ways, I've softened a lot, and it's been interesting to me because coming out of that tradition, I still have that mindset that there are certain pillars that if you're gonna call yourself a Christian, you have to have these things. But what is often the case is that we want to make way more of those than there actually are. And so we're doing it wrong, whereas in we're trying to say, you know, we all have to be united and we all have to look the same. We need to just take that minute to be like, okay, how are you looking at this? how are you seeing this? And rather than automatically saying this person is wrong because they're doing it different than I am, we need to start understanding and kind of putting in a framework of how do we evaluate this stuff?
Yeah. One of my things that I have a tendency to do is when somebody believes something that's different than me, I just, well, teach me why you believe it that way. Yeah. So I can better understand you. I think one of the first questions I ever asked you when we were getting to know each other was, and I kind of do this with everybody, is just, what's your denomination? And one of the reasons is so I could better understand you. And I mean, and to me, to not that I was, you know, using that information to put myself above someone or above you or anything like that. It's just so I can, you know, understand how you believe God affects you in your daily walk, things like that. And, you know, I do that with everybody. And it's just so also that I can learn. Because, you know, I didn't start out my journey with Christ as a, what's the best way to put this, as a apostolic, or as a, sorry, as a non-denominational. I started out as an apostolic. And from that I've grown because other people have influenced me and pointed me in different directions in the Bible to where I possibly myself could be wrong. And I grew from that and I became a better person for it.
Well, and I'd like to say that, you know, kind of jumping off of what you just said, I'd like to say that, that something that's been interesting about looking at my life as far as that, that faith aspect is that it's hard for me to not see these distinctions in that, that weird, beautiful unity because of the fact that, that I've had experiences, like lengthy experiences, not in every denomination. I don't think any person is able to do that unless you're literally church hopping, and that serves nobody.
Oh, yeah.
But I grew up in a Catholic church. I got saved at a non-denominational church. I, throughout my seminary, throughout college, I was at a Baptist church. Throughout seminary, I was at the phenomenon that only exists in Texas, a Bible church. I come back here and I'm in a Christian Missionary Alliance church, the biggest denomination that no one's ever heard of. And, you know, I didn't just go to these places. Now, when I was in the Catholic Church, like I wouldn't even say that I was a Christian. I was just going because it's what we were supposed to do. But at that point, even in that regard, I was an altar boy. Like even though I wasn't even really bought into the whole deal, I was still neck deep in.
Right.
I was a youth leader. Literally 2 months after I got saved, they had me be a youth leader to be the big imposing guy to sit between junior high kids to stop them from talking. Like, there's never been a moment in my church career that I wasn't like all in. Like, all right, if we're going to do this, we need to do this.
Yes.
But coming through that, there have been times when I've been frustrated as all get out, but it forced me, being in it as much as I was, it forced me to look at the differences and acknowledge them. And every time I left for a different place, I could look back on what was and was like, okay, this was what I loved. This is what I didn't like at all. And this one kind of just frustrated me. And I started evaluating and I said, okay, there's nuance here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be like my buzzword for this episode, just because I think that's something that we need to pursue again. Because so much of the world that we live in now, at least here in the States, we've completely thrown out the concept of nuance. You are either with me or against me. You are a bastion of light and goodness, or you are the devil. Right, like,
generalize everything.
Yeah. Everything is a stereotype. Everything is a preconceived notion. And there is no such, like, I have a standing rule when I talk to, you know, like, the way when I handle things on Twitter and on Facebook and everything like that, there have been times when I'll see something and I go, I can speak to this. And I go, wait a minute. There is no nuance on the internet. There is no subtlety. And I kind of agree, but not really. There is none of that. And I think that especially in our conversations on the internet when we can, but especially in the way we handle each other, especially when we're, you know, in this, you know, as everything becomes more and more global, more and more outward, more and more non-bubble, if that makes sense. Like, you can't live in the bubble anymore successfully. I mean, you can, but only if you only stay in the bubble. Yes. And it's getting harder and harder to do that. And I think it's important, like, yeah, as we talk about this whole concept of D&D, there is going to be that concept of generality, because it's the only way to communicate the basic tenet, the generic understanding. It's important to have that Kleenex discussion, as it were. Yes. Because, you know, the world of role playing is so vast and so crazy. The world of board gaming is so vast and so crazy. Like, when people ask me, what type of games do you play? Over the years now that we've been doing this, I've started to evaluate. And I start saying, do you really care enough to want to get into the nuance and all the finer points of what board games I play? I was just at a wedding last weekend, and a friend of mine, she goes, oh, like, what are your favorite games? And I said, I'd mention them, but you've never heard of any of them.
I usually like saying, well, I'll play any game once. And then that's when they usually go, do you play Monopoly? I said, I've already played that one once.
Yeah. Never again. But you start understanding that, you know, okay, you need a touch point. You need something that they can get that without going, you know, dumping the nerd bucket on them, they'll understand. And so, yeah, D&D does do that for role-playing games. Yes, I'm a Christian does do that. You know, I'm X, just any of the various things. I am this. Does that to a degree, but I think it's important that we strive for that nuance, that understanding that there are differences, that there are unique things, because I think there's a lot of beauty in that. Yeah. You know, I've rare to never busted out with a lesson, as it were, especially on here. But there was a class that I took in seminary, and it was one of those classes that I had to take because they required you to take it. I had no desire to be in missions, which is funny because now I call myself a gaming missionary. I had no desire to be in any kind of missions, but I was required to take a missions class.
Yeah.
And I asked around. I said, if I got to take this, I want to take it with a good professor. So who should I take it with? And, like, universally, everyone was saying, if you can get in this guy's class, you should take it. And I said, okay. So I got in his class, and I was super excited. And early on, I think it was, like, maybe the first half of the semester, but I can't remember exactly. But early on, he drew this, like, circle on the board, and he said, pick any major doctrine. And I think we picked, like, sanctification or something like that. And he wrote that word in the middle of the circle. He goes, how much of this do you think we know? Like, we, us in this room. And we're all like, okay, clearly this is a gag. Clearly it can't be all of it. So we're all throwing out like 30%, 40%, whatever. Nobody was over 50%. And he cuts this tiny little sliver. He goes, that's us. And he goes, and our brothers and sisters in Mexico add this. Our brothers and sisters in Russia add this. Our brothers and sisters. And he basically said, look, you're always going to read the Bible as Americans. And whether you want to admit it or not, that will always just taint. You know, I don't want to use taint because it's got negative connotations.
Yeah.
But it's fitting. it colors. That's a better term. It colors the way you read scripture. I had actually a different professor in another classroom actually held his glasses out. He goes, I will always read the Bible as a upper middle class Anglo-Saxon white male from America. And for me to understand the Bible rightly, I have to understand that those are the glasses that I always wear. And I have to be able to take them off and try to look at them somewhere, some other way. I have to bring in other voices that show me other things. And while I didn't take any other missions classes, that dude's class shook me. Because it reminded me that it's so true. That there's so much nuance and there's so much cultural stuff that goes on. And there's so much subtle difference.
You know what that though makes me think? Is that because, and I do agree with this too, that I will always, to me, read the Bible as a middle class white American male. And it's just because that's who I am. But that makes me want to be more inclusive in my personal group.
Yeah.
And more diverse. You know, bring more people closer to me that are not like me, so therefore I can learn from them. Whether it be the person from a different ethnic background or a person from a different denomination, you know, and that's kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah, I remember I took a trip to Amman, Jordan, and it was a bunch of us from the school and a bunch of people from our church. And all of us that were in seminary, all of us were in ministry, and we all just kind of, you know, several of my buddies just preached in churches, you know, in the area, because the guy we supported, that our church supported, was actually kind of an organizational guy who touched base with literally like every church in the region. And so because of that, because we were there to visit him, he connected us with all of these churches. It was actually really cool because I got to speak at the Amman Baptist School, which was really interesting. One, just because of the experience of speaking to this room of hundreds of junior high age kids. And the other thing was, it was my first time teaching with a translator. So it was a whole different awkward skill set for me that I was kind of pushing. And after I did the big presentation thing, there was one class that they had me speak to, and I'm like, look, you know, I was there for maybe 3 minutes before I realized, I'm like, look, you're never going to have somebody like me again for, you know, and you know, while you're in this age, in this class. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm never going to be here again in the foreseeable future. You know, things might change, but I don't plan on being back here. So I'm like, rather than me just giving you something, what do you want to talk about? Now, I'd worked with high school and junior high kids for years at this point, but I'd always worked with American high school and junior high kids. So when I go in expecting these are the questions that I'm going to get asked, I was floored by what I was actually asked, because I got asked questions like, is it a sin not to fast? I got asked, what do you do about spiritual warfare and demonic possession? I got asked questions, and at one point the teacher looked at me, because these kids spoke English, but it was, you know, it was clearly their second language, obviously. Right. And so every once in a while the teacher would back me up and just say, you know, in Arabic, what I just said, just to make sure that everybody understood. And at one point I was just shocked. And the teacher's like, is it okay? Do you not want to talk about this? I go, no, I can talk about this. I can talk about this for days. I'm just shocked that I got asked to talk about this here. Because I had gotten so used to our kind of junior high and our kind of high school.
Right.
And it reminds us that there is this, and even within our borders, even within our, you know, even within New Jersey, oh my goodness, within New Jersey, it's such a different thing. Like, you know, anybody from who's been and spent any significant time in my state will know that North New Jersey is completely different than Southern New Jersey. It's practically two separate states. And if that's the case, how much different is it from the rest of the country? How much different is it from another country with completely different cultural norms? You know, a lot of times we forget that while we try to seek this, you know, this is what this is like, we do terrible disservice when we say that everything has to fall in line with our understanding of it. Because, especially because of the fact that God doesn't give a crap about our, you know, I won't say he doesn't give a crap. He clearly does. He clearly cares. But I want to just say that he's not bound by any of our cultures.
Right.
By any of our histories. He's not bound by any of that. So why do we expect him to be? Why do we expect him to care mostly about what we care most about?
I think it's because we try to relate God to ourselves.
Yeah.
A lot. So that's a big problem too. Because he's not us. And we're not him. But we like to be, you know, we like to put him as, I like to say, the middle class American Jesus. And we can't. He doesn't really fit that mold.
Oddly enough, as random a reference as this is going to be, I can't even remember the name of it. Though it's the movie where Will Ferrell is a race car driver.
Talladega Nights, one of my favorite movies.
Talladega Nights.
I pray to the little baby Jesus.
Yeah, he says, I pray to baby Jesus.
So tiny baby Jesus right there in the manger.
And I'm just, and so much of what we're talking about, like we want to automatically assume that God's going to be what we want, what we expect him to be. And even how we read the Bible, the craziest thing to realize is, and I got this from doing a bunch of studying in church history. We look at the great heresies of the early church and we realize we look at it and go, oh, those people were clearly foolish. They don't know what's right and what's wrong. And it was my professor who looked at us and said, you do realize they're reading the same Bible you are, right? You do realize that you are one problem thought away from being the exact same as them, right? You do realize that you probably have had already several thoughts that are way more heretical than anything these gentlemen have said, right?
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny though, but thinking about that, just as a sidetrack, that, but nowadays, if we have those thoughts and we speak those thoughts, we don't get thrown out of a church, we just leave and start a new church.
Yeah. We create a new one.
Yeah.
The way I always describe it is I'm a person who believes in the inerrancy of Scripture. It's something that I hold to. I can't go to the schools that I went to and not have picked that up. And I believe that the Bible is perfect and exactly how it's supposed to be. However, I also understand that I'm not. My reading of it is not. And I think that that's something that we need to strive for when we, in this, if nothing else in this podcast about language, apparently, that's how we ended up going with this.
And this was supposed to be a short podcast tonight, too.
No, we don't do that. A short podcast when it's actually an hour long and not an hour and 15. The finer points of understanding, and I think you really tagged it earlier when you just said that it's important to look for understanding and to ask somebody to teach you how you got to that point, how somebody got to that point. I've always said that even if I don't agree with somebody, if you can show me how you got there and do so in a way that makes logical sense, even if I don't agree with it, even if I look at your points and say, I don't think it says that, but if I can look at that and see your points and see your development, I will say, good on you.
Yeah.
I can't fault that.
Algorithm of your belief.
Ooh, fun times.
Yeah. Computer nerd.
But yeah, I think it's just, I want to bring nuance back to the internet in this podcast. I think our community is doing a great job of this. Because we've got people from all these different denominations. We've got people from no church background at all. Or we've got people from a church background who basically said, screw this, I don't buy it, who are still a part of our community. And I think some of the beauty of how this works is that we understand the nuance. And even though we don't always, there have been times when anger or frustration or whatever, we all succumb to the anger of it's my way or the highway. We all get that way. But I think at some point we dial that back and realize that these are people. I'm a person. And maybe there's something to this. And we need to really explore all these differences. We need to acknowledge that those differences exist and seek to bring about understanding and really just be at the same table together without worrying about so many of the finer points.
Need to be at God's table and not the Thanksgiving table.
Ooh. We're far enough from Thanksgiving. We can make those.
Yeah. Or the Christmas table. We're not that far yet.
I think that this is a good place to wrap this up. Hopefully, Mr. Romo will return. You should also, by the time this goes live, we'll be filming and recording, hopefully this Friday, should technology allow for it. One of my goals, like we said last episode, is that I want to get regular video content for the Numenera Rebirth series. I want that to be regular content. So far I'm doing good. We'll see if that continues. Daniel, you got anything happening in the near future?
Hopefully I can get in some D&D on Friday night with the as I call it, the Face of the Beholder group that has spawned out of the tavern. In the wonderful software known as Fantasy Grounds. And again, be praying for me on Saturday night. Well, you will hear about it next session about how well this went. Hopefully I might be able to record these kids playing some Savage Worlds or D&D, as we will call it, and see how they react. A lot of them, they're very artsy as far as they enjoy acting. So hopefully they will enjoy this because they'll get to be what they want to be.
All right, folks. All that said, we hope that you will pursue nuance and understanding. And always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.